And you are listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. I'm speaking with Matthew Lassar, who teaches communications and telecom history at the University of California at Santa Cruz. He is also covering the FCC and lots of communications issues for the tech news site online called ArsTechnica.com. He's also the author of two books on the history of Pacifica Radio and the Pacifica Radio Network, which is where community radio got its start in the United States. Matthew, do you want to stick around and talk a little bit about digital television?
Oh, my God. Wake me up when it's over.
we'll push on a little bit. So, and this is something I've been speaking about on the show for weeks now, is that coming up in February, is it the 17th? Is that correct?
That's the theory. Yeah, it's coming up in February.
The theory.
The last day of analog broadcasting for 1,700 plus full power television stations in the United States. Low power TVs will still broadcast in analog, but the full power TV stations have to all go digital.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, there's about 19 million households in the United States, where it's estimated, or at least the last time I checked, there were 19 million households in the United States which have just analog TV. They got just rabbit ears only TV. How this happened or why it is they still have this is, I guess, it's just force of habit. But they just watch those analog channels. And February 18th, they're going to wake up, 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever, it's February 18th, and they're going to get, it's going to be a useless piece of furniture. Not going to work at all. The Department of Commerce, this is National Telecommunications Information Administration, has been giving out $40 coupons. Every American citizen gets two coupons for $40, each worth $40 towards a converter box, which will turn your old rabbit ears TV set into a digital ready TV set, so you can watch digital channels. But they ran out of money. Who would think if the Bush administration would run out of money for something like this?
Well, I remember when Congress was dickering about it. I mean, it was a big political football in that bill, with the Democrats, of course, saying you're going to need to spend much more money, and the Republicans taking every opportunity they could to slash the budget and threatening then to filibuster, and then President Bush threatening to veto it if they put too much money in the budget for these coupons. And now, this forced changeover, you're going to have people out in the cold. And right now, I mean, there's a waiting list with thousands of names on it waiting for one of these converter boxes.
When you go to the National Telecommunications Information Agency's converter box coupon thing, they basically tell you, sign up here and you're on a list. They're estimating that they get about 1 million inquiries now about a week, every week, about this thing. And they're totally behind. They can't give out any more coupons because they ran out of money. So people are talking. The Consumers Union last week talked about moving the digital transition up, delaying it. And Michael Powell and William Kennard, former FCC commissioners, have suggested this at all as well. And various people in Congress are sort of talking about it. Jay Rockefeller, Senator West Virginia, talking about moving the digital transition. The problem is that this would require a congressional bill. It would require both the Senate and the House to hold hearings to decide on a new date. And this thing is happening a month from now. And all of the TV stations in the United States have been blaring, by order of the FCC, have been blaring these public service announcements, telling everybody that it's February 17th. All the big box consumer companies have been stocking up on these, converter boxes. The spectrum, which is the spectrum in that area, when it's once it's vacated by these analog TV stations, is supposed to go to all these companies that bought it for $19.6 billion. So we're really not in a situation, in my opinion, in which moving the digital transition ahead is feasible. I don't want to sound hard-hearted about this. I'm really concerned about these 19 million households in the United States. But the problem is that this, It's not the broadcasting industry or the wireless industry's fault that the government screwed this up.
Well, and that really is where the blame lies, isn't it? I mean, this is really one of the is probably the largest forced technological obsolescence in American history, right, where you know, millions of devices are going to be made forcibly obsolete by legislative fiat, right? It's not a slow process. This is, we're turning off the spigot. You know, I don't think it's happened since they moved the FM band, right, from 44 megahertz to 92.
You're talking about after the Second World War. Yeah. You know, it's an interesting point. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, it probably is the biggest planned obsolescence, planned shutdown in American history. In fairness, I mean, you know, if you read my articles about the National Association of Broadcasters and all these groups, I'm constantly critical of them, constantly critical of what they say. But in fairness to them, you know, they've been obeying all the rules. They've done everything. They bought the auction. They bought, you know, they bought the spectrum at a huge price. They've run all the PSAs on their TV stations. They've done all the testing. They agreed to February 17th. They've done all this stuff for the government now, you know, 2 weeks before, you know, and that's what it'll be if we're lucky, 2 weeks before the digital transition, to suddenly say, well, you know, sorry, we made a mistake, and so now you have to change the date. You're going to have to run PSAs saying, no, it's not February 17th. Instead, it's, you know, September 17th or something like that. It just, you know, it's a regulator's nightmare, and it so discredits regulation. It so discredits good regulation.
Mm-hmm.
It so discredits the Federal Communications Commission.
Well, maybe that was the plan all along, you know, at least from some of the so-called free marketeers and on the Republican side of the aisle. Maybe it was the plan all along if they... If they injure it from the start and it lumbers along, then you have another example to trot out of the incompetency of the Federal Communications Commission and of communications regulation in general.
You know, and on top of this, now you know there's a lot of evidence. One FCC commissioner, Robert M. McDowell, yesterday, you know, pointed out that the FCC's call center is underfunded. You know, the 1-800 call FCC. Center where you can get help with your TV set on, you know, during the week of February 17th. That's really underfunded, and what the government really needs to do, and I wrote this in Ars Technica today, what the government really urgently needs to do is it needs to pass a law exempting the NTIA from what's called the Anti-Deficiency Act. It's an act that says that government agencies can't spend more money than they've been allocated.
Mm.
There needs to be an Anti-Deficiency Act exemption for the NTIA. They can spend as much money on coupons as they need to over the next 4 months. And also the FCC needs to get that for its call center. And, you know, basically there needs to be a whole lot of money infused into helping the public with this.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be real serious mess between February 17th and March 17th.
Well, as I mentioned on last week's show, you know, I mean, it's, you know, on one hand, you could be kind of hard-hearted and you could look at it and say, well, you know, people, this is just $40, just a converter box. But, you know, I think that the folks who have not upgraded, you know, to a digital television or who do not subscribe to cable or who do not subscribe to satellite television, where they'll take care of the conversion for you, are going to be overwhelmingly people who are impoverished, overwhelmingly people to whom $40 is a pretty big deal and who probably overwhelmingly comparatively rely on television for their information needs, whether it's emergency information, weather information, political information, or other things, who are going to be affected by this transition and who will be left really without an information lifeline. And all of us, you know, take for granted every single day, left without it on February 17th.
That's why, you know, I mean, I don't know, but, you know, this could be digital Katrina. It really could. You know, when the NAB, a couple of years ago, they said that they were working really hard on educating the public on this, they said this is television's Y2K. It really could be television's Katrina.
Hmm.
I mean, this could be one of those situations in which a whole lot of poor people, old people, Spanish people with disabilities and people in rural areas get left out, get left out. And that's the reason why it's really important for the government to allocate a lot of money. The problem is that David Obey's allocation allocates about $550 million for this for the coupon, but that's not good enough because that's attached to this big bill, which there's going to be a big deliberation and debate about. And by the time that gets out, it's going to be February 17th is upon us. They need to do an emergency thing right now. They need to do it on January 21st and hand it to Obama on January 22nd. Is this emergency allocation for the NTIA? Otherwise, this is not going to work. Half of Puerto Rico, Paul, half of Puerto Rico has analog television.
Mm-hmm.
Wake me up when it's over. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting January and February here as we watch it all go down. We'll certainly learn more about Julius Genachowski during his Senate confirmation hearing once the Obama folks actually admit that he's their pick. And we have it all confirmed, and it's not just our speculation.
He's like a nice-looking guy. Nice-looking young fella.
He's pretty, yeah, he is a young fella. I guess he is younger than President-elect Obama?
A little bit. He's about 42, 43. He seems like a
very
personable guy. Everybody seems to like him a lot. Not that
really qualifies you to be a FCC commissioner. And these will be very interesting times, and I'm glad, Matthew, that you will be keeping track of it for us all at arstechnica.com, and that's arstechnica.com, where many of your colleagues are also doing some very excellent reporting on communications issues.
Julian Sanchez has a great article, which you should check out, about debates within the wireless industry about the DTV transition. Great investigative piece. Really good.
And Nate Anderson as well, been doing some great things about copyright and other issues.
Got a great article about YouTube and the Digital Millennial Copyright Act, and this guy who is this film critic who got nuked from YouTube and the politics behind that. Really great, first-rate stuff every day on ArsTechnica.com.
It's amazing, to see this type of primary reporting, and research being done on this, basically what is a technology news site that has no print correlate. I guess it is owned and run by Condé Nast, which is a huge...
It was bought by Condé Nast last year. It was independently owned for 10 years. It's really a remarkable operation. They call it the Orbiting HQ. I'm not even sure it has an office anywhere.
Uh-huh.
I think that the store is basically the office.
And this is
that the last time I checked, I think that Eric Bangerman, who is the managing editor, and Nate, who is the senior editor, sit in a coffee shop somewhere in Chicago. That's how it all gets. I don't know. I have no idea. I admire these two guys so much. I just imagine that they're just plotting the world.
He writes the articles and you collects the checks, I guess.
That's the way it is.
Condé Nast also owns Wired and Wired.com.
Wired too. They own Portfolio.com, and they reproduce a lot of our sector stuff on that.
Okay.
And it's going to be a paperless world pretty soon, folks.
But if you're interested in these sorts of issues, I really do recommend people read it. It sorts of some very good reporting with a definite eye towards the public interest and really our future information economy, our future information freedoms and communication freedoms are the types of things. And yet it's very well done reporting. It's not strictly advocacy reporting. It's all very well done. As well, you are an instructor. You are a teacher of communications history and policy there at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Are you going over some of these issues with your students right now?
I'm going over some of these issues. I'm actually going to be in Washington, D.C. for 3 months.
Oh.
Starting in March. I've gotten a gig with the University of California's UCDC program. I'm teaching in Washington, D.C. I'm going to spend a whole lot of time in D.C., mucking it up with all these various troublemakers and miscreants who run Washington, D.C. I have to say that as a Barack Obama supporter, I'm very happy that he's president of the United States.
And I hope you'll still talk to us when you're in D.C.
Anytime.
maybe you'll get a chance to hit those FCC archives, for your days off.
I have no days off, Paul. I am ever 24/7, ever vigilant.
And that's why we call you. That's why we're so privileged to have you call into the show here on Media Geek. So, Matthew, thank you so much for regaling us with your data.
I hope that Arctic experience of yours warms up in the near future.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Bye-bye, Paul. Bye.
And once again, that was Matthew Lassar. Writes for ArsTechnica.com, covering the FCC and communications issues. also an instructor on communications history and policy at the University of California at Santa Cruz. Right now, it's almost a quarter of 10 p.m. here at WNUR FM, Evanston in Chicago, Chicago's sound experiment at 89.3 FM. And this program is Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Reismandel, and I'm your host. And you can check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. You can catch some of the news before it comes on the show. Certainly was blogging about the announcement of Julius Genachowski as the probable FCC chair apparent before the show came on. Been covering lots of issues like that, as well as my Twitter feed, twitter.com/MediaGeek, where I get a lot of these little news headlines. I plop them in there. So if you are a Twitter user, you put me into your feed, start following me. Or otherwise, you can see the feed at the Media Geek website at MediaGeek.net. That's twitter.com/MediaGeek. And, of course, the radio show is at radio.MediaGeek.net. And if you have any comments about the program, please send them to me, paul@MediaGeek.net.